Welcome back, Thursday, April 25th, 2024. Thank you for giving me the day off yesterday, young David. I had a little spielkiss in my gynecologist, but I'm doing fine now. There's a new and odd thing going on regarding police and private universities, particularly Columbia. Professors there are saying police should not enter the university because it will further agitate the tinderbox. It makes students of color feel unsafe to have the police, and it adds tension to an already tense situation. It's not just professors saying that. It's commentators, it's Ilhan Omar, and it's students, even law students. Here's Ilhan Omar, quote, "Throughout history, protests were co-opted and made to look bad so police and public leaders would shut them down. That's what we are seeing now at Columbia University. The Columbia protesters have made clear their demands and want the school not to be complacent in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. Public officials and media making this about anything else are inflaming the situation and need to bring calmness and sanity back," close quote. Here's the thing to know about Ilhan Omar. It's not just that she is a woman of great self-anointment and entitlement. It's that she doesn't believe in law, or perhaps I should say the law. She believes in her law. That is to say, how she wants it and defines it and thinks it should be. And any law contrary to her thoughts are illegitimate, if not badges of tyranny. This is, of course, anarchy, where 335 million people get to decide what the law is for themselves rather than subject themselves to the law or democratic processes created so we could all live in a certainty or as much certainty of peace and stability as possible. How do I know? Well, this line of hers, quote, "Public officials and media making this about anything else are inflaming the situation and need to bring calmness and sanity back," close quote. But here's the thing. Public officials and media are not making this about anything else. And the case at the center for Omar is, as she puts it, the genocide in Gaza. People can say and protest anything they want, including decrying that, even if it happens not to be true or at best debatable. They are being arrested for actions, illegal occupations and encampments and disturbances of peace and putting people in apprehension of fear. The one thing they are not being arrested for, but should be, or at least investigated for, is invocations and chants on behalf of genocide, which they claim to be opposing. These protests have made the campuses so unsafe for one particular minority, a minority Ilhan Omar will not find one sentence to speak on behalf of, that they've been told to go home and study online, that their safety cannot be protected. USC just canceled its graduation ceremonies because it can't guarantee the safety of the people who would go there. This is not a heckler's veto. This is a riot's success. The heckler's veto is when the response to a speaker gives cause to silence a speaker. Here, the mob has chased the Jews off campus at Columbia, or at least put them in apprehension of fear, all of which, at a minimum, constitutes assault or a hate crime based on assault. We should not even bother to discuss Ilhan Omar's daughter, who has been arrested for illegally protesting. Remember now, protest is not illegal. It's when and where and how you do it. Just as driving is not illegal, it's when and where and how you do it. Ilhan Omar's daughter is proof of both the nurture and nature theory of childhood rearing. She claimed yesterday, quote, "Zionist fire hoses disrupted their protest." Zionist fire hoses. Like Bull Connor's fire hoses in Birmingham, I suspect. You know what the hoses were, though? The sprinkler system. I guess to a snowflake, a sprinkler is a fire hose. But what made them Zionist? To the Omars of the world, be it the Benjamins or her saying, "May Allah awaken the people and help them see the evil doings of Israel," or false charges of dual loyalty about Jews in America, to Omar, like the song, if you could see her in the musical Cabaret, "Behind every problem is a Jew," including sprinklers turned into fire hoses, Zionist sprinklers. But the bigger issue here is yet to come, and it's this notion that sending in the police is the exacerbating factor. The thing that makes things worse, as one post put it Columbia Law School hat tip to the Free Beacon, quote, Jewish classmates should not advocate for the school to bring police to campus to ensure their safety because the presence of law enforcement makes students of color feel unsafe. Police make students of color feel unsafe and feel as though we've learned nothing since George Floyd, said one Columbia Law School student. Quote, I shouldn't have to explain why people of color, especially black students, do not want dozens of police officers in riot gear all over campus. Why are we pretending like we don't know that this country has a serious police brutality problem where unarmed black people are murdered indiscriminately by police officers? Close quote. Three question marks before the quote closes. Oh, my God. These people are about to become lawyers and judges. George Floyd taught us nothing, she says. Really? Maybe it taught this law school student nothing. More Jews have been harassed and assaulted on Columbia's campus in 6 months than at least 3 years of unarmed black men being shot by police. The difference is the law student could see that with her own two eyes on campus, but invention and imagination are indeed powerful things. So is ideology, especially if one wants to look away from the underbelly of the problem. What is the underbelly? Entitlement, idiocy, and Jew hatred. Sometimes all three, but usually just one of the three. Entitlement is the snowflakery that says we can do whatever we want. It's just that you cannot. If we don't want a speaker here, we can shout him down. It's just that you cannot. If we think a Republican should not be elected and you elect him, that's election fraud and maybe even Nazism. If we get elected who we want and you don't like him, you are an election denier and, yes, also a Nazi. Quod licet Jovi, non licet bovi. Then there's the idiocy part. Well, you've seen the interviews, haven't you? Have you seen the interviews of the two NYU students marching for divestment from Israel? The two in particular I love so much. Asked if there was something NYU is doing, one meekly replied, quote, I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they are. She then turned to her friend and asked, do you know what NYU is doing here? Remember, these are protesters carrying signs. The friend, who was wearing a face mask, then asked, doing about what? The first friend says, about Israel. Why are we protesting here at NYU specifically? The student asked. The second one said, I wish I were more educated. Oh, my God. These people will be elite college graduates soon. By the way, all of them, almost always, with nose hoop rings, I guess the easier to be led around with. The Jew hatred part is not worthy of spending too much time on. It's been documented everywhere, from the false imprisonment of Jews who have to hide out in libraries to October 7th should happen again and again and 100, 1,000, 10,000 times, to the Hamas flags, to the surrounding of Jewish students and professors and not allowing them into their buildings, to professors saying they are with Hamas, literally saying that, which is a designated terror organization, literally a designated terror organization. Imagine for a moment a professor saying, I am with Al-Qaeda in 2001 or 2002 or any year. Or take the SJP, Students for Justice in Palestine organization. They have a resistance toolkit flying all around the web and used to train protesters and encourage protests at these universities. I want you to read it. It advocates and trains these protesters with such beautiful lyrics as, embrace the resistance, which is to them what we would call terrorism. October 7th is resistance to them, or liberation. Resistance isn't the marching. Resistance is the terrorism. Hamas and these affiliated organizations, again, are designated terrorist organizations. So, a solution to all of this, a compromise, if you will, for the students at Columbia and NYU and everywhere else. How about we don't actually send in the local police? Instead, let's send in the FBI because we need to, and it's long past time, to start investigating federal statutes against the material support for terrorism. Material support for terrorism. That's a federal offense. It's also a state offense in most states, like New York, like Arizona, but they don't want the police. Fine. If Merrick Garland can send the FBI and Joint Task Force into school board meetings where they oppose critical race theory and the sexualization of children, how about sending them in for what the federal statutes were really designed for, protecting this country from things like terrorist cells. Material support for terrorism. Look it up. Not police, FBI. That's what's needed on our college campuses. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, 602-508-0960. Young David, you never gave us an update on your camping trip last weekend.
What would you like to know?
Did you actually do it?
Yeah.
Was it fun? What did you eat?
Oh my gosh, I ate like a king. I slept under the stars, out in the open, in the Superstition Mountains.
No tent?
No. I had a sleeping pad. That was about it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's real camping.
Big fire. The person I was with, whom you know, has a very large cooking set. We had two steaks, baked beans. I did corn on the cob right there over the fire. We had a portable grill. You know, it was great.
And was there singing?
No, but there was shooting of guns and other manly activities.
Singing not being a manly activity. Yeah. Manly activities. You know what? I respect you for this because my view of camping is mostly that it's a fraud, but you did it for real.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Went way out where the sun don't shine in the Superstition Mountains. Yep.
And then was the fire warm for the morning and the coffee on the fire pit and all that?
Mm-hmm. That's how it was done, right? Wow. There over the fire with the old
just like
I don't even know what
saddles.
what you would call that, but the old coffee
yeah.
maker.
It's yeah.
A, you know,
yeah.
The blue speckled thing that yeah. you see in, you know, movies like Picnic.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's fun. Any other updates in the life of David that we need?
You won't see me tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't call, ladies and gentlemen, because I won't be here.
No, do
and I know
call.
I'm the reason you're calling.
No, do call. I like talking to people.
Yes, yes. I'll be out over the weekend enjoying things at Tiki Oasis.
Well, tell me about
Tiki
Oasis.
Oasis at the Hotel Valley Ho, which I've never been to, but I'm told it's a Arizona landmark. And after our golf tournament on Monday, I needed some much-deserved time off, and I'm going to be enjoying the Tiki Oasis convention at the Hotel Valley Ho over this weekend.
You've never been to the Valley Ho?
No.
Oh, you're in for a treat. You're going to like it.
Yeah.
It's made for you.
I've gotten the evening pass.
It's all 1950s.
Yeah, it's exactly what's going on all day. There will be DJs and cabanas. And
it's what's going on all year there. It's a 1950s-themed hotel.
Well, yeah, we're getting there.
I'm glad you're going to do that. That'll be fun.
I'm getting there.
Are you going to go in a? Are you going to go in that? What was that great blue velour outfit James Bond was wearing?
Oh, Goldfinger? I know exactly what you're talking about. The two-piece,
The two-piece velour
cabana
suit. He was playing. Was he playing poker?
Suit.
A cabana suit.
They were playing. What were they playing? Bridge or something?
I think poker. And Goldfinger had
and
his
watching,
spy. Yeah, reporting in his earpiece.
I believe Honor Blackman's up there on the balcony watching him with binoculars.
Fantastic. Yep. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Please tell me you have an outfit like that.
No, but I'll work on getting one before tomorrow.
Yeah, you will.
I'll probably just wear a – do you know what a guayabera is? It's a Cuban
shirt. Yeah,
yes,
we all had those. Yeah.
Guayabera.
Yeah, we all had those. They're kind of a Havana shirt we used to call them. Yeah. Oh, how fun. We'll make sure and take pictures.
Yeah, I don't know what else has been going on. We all had a party yesterday while you weren't here. We had pizza and chicken wings and all sorts of other things.
Without me?
Yeah, because you weren't here.
No, really. Come on.
No, we did not.
Oh, you didn't?
Okay. No, we did not.
All right.
It was rather lackluster without you around here.
Yeah. Well, thanks for filling in. I was a little under, but I'm over now. Under the weather. That's an old nautical term. Did you know that? Under the
weather? No, I didn't.
I think it's where you would put people on a boat when they got sick. Under the
hull.
Yeah, yeah. So to segregate them from the rest of the community.
Huh. Under the weather.
Illnesses.
I'm under the weather. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You missed the lunch that I had today.
Oh, I did.
Yes, I went to one of your favorite
places.
Oh,
I gave you advice.
Yes, you gave me advice.
And you turned it against me.
My goodness. You weren't here this morning, so I had to consult our office friend Travis.
Yeah.
And Travis said, go to Tokyo Express because I was looking for something on the healthier side for lunch. He said some Japanese food.
So go to Tokyo Express.
Go to Tokyo Express.
Okay.
Get the teriyaki chicken. Yeah. And I know that you and Travis enjoy this restaurant, so I text you and I say, how do you get your chicken done at Tokyo Express?
Yeah.
And you say, don't go to Tokyo Express.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go to this other restaurant even within walking distance.
It's closer.
I said, well, I'm already
it's
at
closer.
Tokyo
It's closer.
It's on 24th Express.
And Indian School. Okay, so you're already there, so you got that. But I told you to get two salads
and teriyaki chicken.
Which are fantastic. Yeah. And you said, okay, I'm taking the hint. I will bring you a salad. No, you were misattributing to me my generosity towards you. I was doing it for you. I didn't want the salad. I can't eat the salad. I told you
can't
to get
eat
two.
Salad? Are you allergic to vegetables?
Well, I told you.
I believe that.
I'm on
point.
An odd diet this week. But I told you to get the two side salads, because after one, you'd be craving another, and I bet I'm right. And it's the right size to get two, and they're delicious, aren't they?
Yeah, it was very good.
Simple ginger dressing.
Ginger dressing. I forget what the brand. Mikasa, I think, is that when you get it at the store, it's a Mikasa ginger dressing?
I don't know.
Okay, anyway.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Somebody in the audience will correct us.
We're all caught up on your gustatory and sartorial habits.
Yeah, I don't know what else I can...
All right, it's
update
good.
You.
No, it's all good
right now.
It's all good. We have Anthony Kern joining us in the next segment. He was one of these people who was indicted by one of these officials who was indicted by Chris Mays, the Attorney General. Yesterday, Zudi Jasser is going to join us at the top of the next hour. Then we'll have Sam Stone in the third hour. I have something important and funny from Jon Stewart I want to do with you. And I don't have enough time to do any of that right now. I just will say one little thing, because I got some texting from some – I don't know if it's the person who called and asked me about my views on Tucker Carlson or someone who heard it. But they were telling me they were watching the Tucker Carlson interview with Kanye that I had made – Kanye West that I had made reference to, and they couldn't see what I was talking about. You're looking in the wrong place. Listen to what I said. And listen to what Tucker said about the interview, not the interview itself. I thought I was clear on the point. For those who did not pick up that point, the point was how he was bragging about how they don't censor, they don't edit, they just don't fear the truth, and so they give it to you straight. And then he went through a huge amount of censorship and editing to package Kanye as not crazy when the outtakes that finally came to light showed him mouthing and splattering and sputtering the craziest kinds of stuff you could imagine. And it led to the whole Kanye West year of anxiety and nonsense. It's not my only concern, but that was one. And I just, when people started texting me saying, I don't hear what you're talking about, it's because you were looking in the wrong place. Go back and listen to my point on it from 2 days ago if you missed it. All right. Anthony Kern coming up, Zudi Jasser, Sam Stone, and of course your call, 602-508-0960. We'll be back in just half a moment. Should I put in a word? Yeah, let me put in a word real quickly for the Midas Gold Group. I love Midas Gold Group. MidasGoldGroup.com. They point out that the Federal Reserve note does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank, but the federal debt doesn't belong to the Federal Reserve Bank. That belongs to you. So as a wake-up call to what the Midas Gold Group veterans believe the central bank and government are trying to do, which is a controlled demolition of our current system with a central bank digital currency to take complete and utter control of our transactions and freedoms, protect yourself. Turn this wake-up call into a phone call to veteran-owned MidasGoldGroup.com, 480-360-3000, or go to MidasGoldGroup.com or call them, 480-360-3000. Always faithful, MAGA, and proud of it. Well, he is the chairman of the State Senate Judiciary Committee. He is a candidate for Congress. He is Anthony Kern. You can go to his website, votekern.com, K-E-R-N, votekern.com. And rumor has it, he is one of the unnamed indictees by Attorney General Chris Mays, who was indicted yesterday, along with several others in Arizona, two of whom, including Mr. Kern, are actually running for election. Anthony Kern, as I mentioned, is running for Congress. Anthony, Senator, welcome back to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you, Seth, so much for having me. I appreciate all you do for the cause, and And yeah, it was a big day yesterday.
Yes, it was on a lot of fronts. On a lot of fronts. I find it amazing what they're doing at the Attorney General. You know, for say anything you want about the indictment, Anthony, but the first thing that comes to mind, aside from the ridiculousness of what I have read in the indictment, you know, these people who keep decrying divisiveness. You know, you have an Attorney General who won election by fewer than 300 votes. And she thinks this is a good way to help unite the state by indicting people running for office in the party opposite hers on things that not even the special counsel is indicting on, Jack Smith?
Right. Well, it's nothing but a political move for her base in an election year. And on the same day that the state house, the Arizona legislature voted, three Republicans voted with all the Democrats. On the pro-life issue, they voted against pro-life and for the murder of innocent children. And so this comes as no surprise. We've been expecting this for several months. It's nothing but a lawfare to the nth degree. Chris Mays, who, like you said, won by less than 300 votes, has taken it upon herself to go after law-abiding citizens such as myself to just appease her base, because she's nothing but a political hack. And we have resources. I have an investigation into Chris Mays that we will have something being announced here real soon.
Oh, good.
As Judiciary Chair, a special inquiry into the picking and choosing of laws that she has done and she's made known, such as the current pro-life law that we have on our books. She and Governor Hobbs are unwilling to enforce.
Yeah.
And so Chris Mays has once again stepped out of bounds, and we're gonna see what we can do about that.
Yeah. Feel free to call me back on when that happens, because that's such a curiosity when you have an attorney general and then the head law enforcement official of the state and the governor saying we refuse to enforce law. What? I don't even understand why people are getting so concerned about the debates when their governor and AG say they're not going to enforce the law anyway.
Right. Well, again, it's the Marxist call. You know, they talk out of both sides of their mouth. They say, you know, let's unify. We're willing to, we want to save our democracy. At the same time, they're using the other hand to destroy our democracy. We can see it all over the country. We can see it in the state of Arizona. And I can guarantee you the voters are not dumb. Trump will win in a landslide in Arizona. The Republicans will hold on to the Arizona state legislature. I will win my congressional seat, and I will go after Chris Mays once the dust settles.
You know, I just got to ask you a couple things here about this odd indictment, Anthony, and I think it is odd as hell because, you know, they like to call them fake electors. I mean, that's certainly a spin, I suppose. But it seems to me that if you have a contested election, and God knows Democrats have contested plenty of elections as recently as 2004, I mean 2016 even, but 2004 probably more directly, as long as you have a contested election, doesn't it make all the sense in the world that should it go the other way, be it through law or other findings, that you would have a different set of electors than the one who...
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Right. Well, yeah, thank you, Seth. Great question. So if you go on my Twitter handle, which is at Anthony Kern AZ, I posted on there something Benny Johnson put out this morning showing Van Jones going through the process of the alternate electors.
Right.
So we did nothing wrong. We sent in an alternate slate of electors. The lie, again, of the left is fake electors.
Right.
There's no such thing. Just as early as 2000, during the Bush-Gore fiasco and the hanging chads, if we all remember that, a judge even told the Gore campaign, look, even if we sided with Al Gore, we could do nothing because we do not have a slate of electors.
Right, right.
So at the time of 2020, and I don't care what they call me, they could call me any name they want. The bottom line is there were many questions in the 2020 election.
Sure.
I still believe it was stolen. And I, with half the state believing that at that time, we decided until we could get a good audit done, we decided to go ahead and set in two sets of electors, and that's what we did. We did nothing wrong. This is nothing but lawfare, and we're gonna make sure that the public sees the truth for what's happening here in the state of Arizona.
I know you got to run. Go get him, Anthony. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Steve Haywood writes, the saga of how state-run radio, better known as NPR, continues to fester despite the best attempts of NPR's new apparatchik, Catherine Marr, to suggest her previous hostile commitments about free speech, her my-trutherism, and her democratic partisanship are all taken out of context. You must understand that for the contemporary left, context is everything, so claiming something anyone says is taken out of context is not a denial that they meant what they said. You're just not choosing the right context to understand it properly. You're using your truth or the truth. You're not using their truth. Yesterday, the New York Times reported Inside the Crisis at NPR, and it could easily be a premier entry in our currently dormant Civil War on the Left series. There's lots of fun bits like this from the New York Times. NPR's trouble extend far beyond concerns about its journalism. Internal documents reviewed by the New York Times and its interviews with more than two dozen current and former public radio executives show how profoundly the nonprofit is struggling to succeed in the fast-changing media industry. It is grappling with a declining audience and falling revenue and internal conflict about how to fix it. A years-long push to diversify NPR staff, in part to lure listeners beyond its aging and predominantly white audience, hasn't generated the listenership boost some executives had hoped for. The organization is now led by Catherine Marr, who started as NPR's chief executive last month after leading the Wikimedia Foundation, which supports the online encyclopedia Wikipedia. Ms. Marr had no professional experience in the news industry. It's not me or Steve Haywood saying that. That's the New York Times saying that. Until a month ago, the head of NPR had no professional experience in the news industry. She sounds like a perfect fit for the job. The best part of the story, though, is the angst over NPR failing the crucial identitarian diversity test. NPR's listening audience is 75% white, and that cannot stand. Having state-run Democratic Party and media is useless unless it reinforces the previous voting habits of minorities, which are slipping away from Democrats right now. From the New York Times, one 2020 survey found that of the people who named NPR as their main source for political and election news, 75% were white, more than any other outlet except Fox News. Oh, my God. The Times is comparing NPR to Fox News. That's got to hurt. There is no lower blow imaginable, is there? Here's a little more. NPR's leaders redoubled their efforts to diversify their audience and workforce and closely tracked metrics for each. They added podcasts aimed at people of color and younger listeners. They promoted people of color to high-profile reporting and hosting jobs. All of these moves were meant to ensure the nation's public radio network would remain competitive as the country's population continued to grow more diverse. So it came as a disappointment to some people on NPR's board last fall when they were presented new internal data showing their efforts hadn't moved the needle with Black and Hispanic podcast listeners. NPR's efforts to diversify itself and its audience never lived up to the expectations of the people who worked there. During a round of layoffs last year, NPR cut a show called Louder Than a Riot. That was a that was a hip-hop podcast that examined Black and queer issues. After that decision, the show's editor, Soraya Shockley, who had previously worked at the New York Times, grilled one Mr. Lansing, the previous president of NPR, during an employee question and answer session about why the show had no dedicated budget, pointing out the lack of resources supporting content that furthered diversity. Well, this turned into a Maoist struggle session. On the call, after Mr. Lansing urged employees to be more mindful of civility in their questions, an NPR employee wrote in an instant messaging chat accompanying the conversation that the word civility is often used as a cudgel against people of color, calling the language choice racist. Did you know that? Did you know you can't ask for civility without being called a racist? After the meeting, Shockley filed a human resources complaint against Mr. Lansing, saying his remarks about civility amounted to, oh, here it is, dog whistle racism. That's how it is. It's not real racism. It's only dogs can hear it. The thing that I have never understood about dog whistle racism, that is to say it's code that only dogs can understand. Who's asked the dog? How do we know this? How do we know it's not bat racism? Don't bats hear high-pitched noises?
I think you're looking way too deep into this.
Do you? When's this notion of dog whistle racism, that only dogs understand it?
Well, I tell you what. Why don't we get Dagny to come in studio, and we'll see how she...
I'm going to go home. I can make it easier for her because she's aged. We don't need to schlep her in at 15 years of age. Here's what I'll do. I'm going to go home tonight, Mr. Bill, who I didn't introduce and I should have, and Miss Terry, who I didn't introduce and I should have, and Mr. Dahl. I am going home tonight, and I am going to yell civility at Dagny. Like 10 times. I'm going to yell civility. And I'll put the test in real time. I'm going to let her out the front, which is forbidden territory. She loves to go out to the front, and it's forbidden territory because, you know, that's the vast 100-acre wood. She could go anywhere. And if she goes off mark, if she goes off the property at the residential compound, then I shall yell civility. Civility. Civility now. I shall yell civility to see if that brings her back. And if not, we will know it's not a dog whistle of racism or of any kind, that not even dogs understand the word civility or racist dog whistles or dog whistles that are racist. Am I going too deeply into this?
I think Dagny would have a defamation suit against you for accusing her of racism.
Well, she's white. I don't know. She's not in a protected class. She's Anglo-European. Brittany's are from France. I don't think she's got a she's not a DOC. She's a DOG.
Not a dog of color.
Mean for you to fracture the inference. Yes. Do you like that phrase, fracture the inference? We should use that more around here. No need to fracture the inference. Do you like that?
Just along with the Mennonized, the eschaton, yes.
You like a man? Okay, that was last week. Now we're not going to fracture the inference.
Elucidate the propensity. I know all of these
Elucidate the propensities?
Yeah.
What about cosmologize your deficiencies? Do you know that one?
No.
What's elucidate the propensities?
That's from the Tip O'Neill ad with Buckley.
Oh, right. Well done.
I'm here to elucidate the propensity.
Nice. Okay. Don't cosmologize your deficiencies or amanitize the eschaton. And what was mine? Don't fracture the inference. Okay. That's actually a friend of mine's name, Jeff. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show, portions of which are brought to you by our good friends at YRefi. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or give them a call at 888-YREFI-24. What YRefi does is they offer up an investment, a secure investment in a collateralized portfolio where you are in control. There are absolutely no fees with YRefi. There's no attack on principal. If you ever need your money back, you can turn your income on or off. You can compound it, whatever you like. And, of course, you get a monthly statement with no surprises. Best of all, you can earn up to a 10.25% fixed rate of return, and none of it correlated to the stock market or the Federal Reserve. Check them out at investyrefi.com. That's invest, the letter Y, then refy.com, or call 888-YREFI-24. Just one last piece on the NPR story from the New York Times. So the president of NPR is being accused of dog whistle racism for using the word civility, that we all need to be more civil. Think about that, what that says about you, if you believe calling for civility, which is effectively just manners, that a call for civility is an attack of group libel. What does that say about you and what you think of your group? If you think civility is an attack on your group, calling for civility. Calling for civility. Anyway, back to the New York Times. Still, some critics of NPR believe NPR's North Star strategy has failed for a completely different reason. It has not taken ideological diversity into account. Tim Eby, who was the general manager of St. Louis Public Radio until 2020, said in an interview that while it made sense for NPR to seek an audience that looked more like the country, he wasn't sure its approach was the right one, and its story selection has on occasion left it open to criticism that its focus on race and identity has affected its news judgment, you think? There have been stories, for instance, on how to decolonize your bookshelf and thin privilege. Well, you'll never guess what happened next, will you? Yeah, Tim Eby was dismissed on charges that he created a hostile race environment at the station. Yeah, that's how it rolls over there. A world I want nothing to do with, and a world that the American taxpayer should have nothing to do with paying for. We'll be right back.